Today's program is brought to you by the Dairy Farm Families of Wisconsin, the Wisconsin Milk Marketing Board. Did you know that today Wisconsin produces more than 600 varieties, types, and styles of American, international style, and original cheese that win more awards than any other state or country? To learn more, visit eatwisconsincheese.com.
I'm Dave Arnold, host of Cooking Issues. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Welcome to All in the Industry on Heritage Radio Network. I'm your host, Sherry Bayer. We're coming to you live from Roberta's Restaurant in Bushwick, Brooklyn. It is Wednesday, November 25th. Happy Thanksgiving Eve to everyone. This is the 88th episode of this series, which is dedicated to behind-the-scenes talents in the hospitality industry. Today, my guest is a dynamic professional chef who specializes in cooking for and with children. I will introduce her in a moment. First, as I do on every show, I will start out with my PR tip. Then later, we will have my speed round game, industry news discussion, solo dining experience, and the final question. As the founder of Bayer Public Relations, I'm going to tip the show off with my PR tip of the week. Today's tip is to be a mentor. Seek to assist others and pass along your knowledge. Advising those with less experience will not only help their careers and pursuits, but it will enhance your skills and make you feel good. So practice mentorship. The mentor-mentee relationship can be very rewarding. That's my tip today. Now, I am thankful to have my guest calling in today. It is Cricket Azima. She is the founder and big cheese of The Creative Kitchen, teaching children and parents about food and how to cook in a fun, safe, and educational manner. Cricket is also the founder of Kids Food Festival, a celebration to educate children on how to make balanced food choices, and she's the author of Everybody Eats Lunch and Everybody Can Cook. So hello, Cricket. Are you out there?
I am. Thank you so much for having me, Sherry. Happy early Thanksgiving to you, too.
Thank you. My pleasure. I'm excited to have you on the show. And so thinking back, I believe we met in the late 90s when we were both at NYU Food Studies program working towards master's. Is that right? Is my memory
Indeed,
right?
It is. It feels like forever ago, but yes.
Yeah, no. No, I loved being part of that program. And I mean, I know you went through and fully, you did a thesis and you graduated and everything. And I ended up taking a leave of absence and just taking, always wishing to go back. But anyways, I was reading about when you started The Creative Kitchen, and it was in 2003. And that's when I started my company. So it was like we started the same place and then our careers went different directions. So why don't we start out a little more with so your background and how you got to NYU and then what led you to open The Creative Kitchen?
Sure. So before I was focused in the culinary industry, I was focused on special events. And in particular, I was working in D.C., working on political events. So as you can imagine, doing events and cooking with kids, with all due respect to politicians, it was a little bit more fun.
A little, possibly.
And it was a natural segue from events. My favorite part of special events were the culinary aspects. And I was at a cross point in my career, and I couldn't decide if I wanted to become a chef, open a restaurant, something on that end of the spectrum, or become a kindergarten teacher. And I had an aha moment and said, well, why don't I combine the both? Some of my favorite memories from my childhood, whether during the Montessori classroom or recreationally, was cooking. So that's what led me in this direction. With regard to NYU, I actually, right before NYU, I did my professional culinary degree at Peter Kumpf, which is now the Institute of Culinary Education, ICE.
Right.
And even there in my externship hours, I was focused on kids and food. And at NYU, I also focused all of my papers, my thesis, every talk was on kids' cookbooks. What kids can learn from cooking, how kids can benefit from cooking in general. I was the annoying, hyper-focused kids cooking person even back then.
And I think that's fabulous because I think what you do is so important, and it's impressive that, I don't know, just the knowing you in the direction you've gone and everything you're doing to help kids eat better and learn how to cook. So I give you a lot of credit.
Yeah, you know what? It's lots of fun. So it's satisfying and fun at the same time.
Well, that's good. So with the Creative Kitchen, for people who aren't familiar with it, what services do you offer, and where are you located? And tell me more about it.
Sure. So the Creative Kitchen, for the most part, we host kids' cooking classes that are hands-on. We teach ages 2 and up, with a focus really on ages 2 through tween. We have weekly classes at different venues around New York City. And then we have our largest event, which is the Kids Food Festival, where we host about 15 or 16,000 people in Bryant Park annually. So we do, you know, our hands-on classes, which can be as small as 12 kids, and then our largest event is about 16,000. So we really run the gamut. In our cooking, we really try to teach more than just a recipe. We really pepper in, pardon the food pun, Cherry, but we pepper in as much math and science and geography, history, nutrition, social studies, art, language and reading skills, as many of the traditional educational disciplines that we can incorporate into the recipe, as well as developmental skills. We also have a focus on some classes that we host for special needs children. I have an 8-year-old son with multiple disabilities, and it's been lovely to learn how to adapt what I was already doing so that he could participate, as well as other kids with various abilities.
That's wonderful. Yeah, and I was looking on your website, and there's your, I guess it's maybe your philosophy being about you're learning more than a recipe. You're tying in lots of fundamentals for children.
Absolutely. And, you know, we really, our recipes are all fruit, vegetable, and whole grain based. So the kids are also learning nutrition and learning to love their fruits and vegetables in a fun and hands-on way. Hopefully, you know, getting them to adapt into their daily diets more readily as well.
Are the kids that are attending your classes, are there regulars, or are they usually new time people just taking a one-time class?
You know, we really get a mixture. We have some children that are enrolled in weekly classes, excuse me, and have been enrolled in our weekly classes for years, in fact. And then other classes, just based on the nature of the venue, are more one-off, special event-type classes, and so we see a lot of new faces. What's really lovely, though, is to see sibling number 3 in some families coming back to the cooking classes and seeing how the recipes that we cook with the kids get adopted into the family's dinner repertoire. So it really feels good, and I hope it tastes good for them too.
Yeah, that is cool. And I was going to ask you, with the curriculum, since you've been doing this now for a dozen years, how has that changed, or how have you seen food and kids, their relationship with food, change, if at all, over the years?
Well, there's a, I can take that a couple different directions. For
take
me,
it whichever one you
how
want.
How it changed the most from when I started cooking classes with kids was really, you know, learning from my son. I mentioned he has multiple disabilities. He's actually nonverbal. So we have adapted the curricula so that kids, we turned all of our recipes into pictorial recipes so that children or adults, for that matter, who are nonverbal or who just learn better with the visual supports can participate. So that's probably the most overt way. But in terms of the kids, it's been really interesting and fun to see the kids get more excited about cooking than in traditional ways that you think of where girls were creating cookies or making cupcakes. I'm seeing more and more boys get excited about cooking. Maybe this has to do also with the Cooking Channel and Food Network popularity. I think that families often watch that together. You have MasterChef Junior and those shows where kids are the chef stars and they're role models. So it's been exciting to see more and more kids get excited about the cooking activity for I think a number of reasons. And from an adult perspective or a parent perspective, it's really exciting to see the kids get more excited about cooking and cook healthful recipes, because then hopefully that also translates to them eating better in general as well.
Yeah, that's great. And so you have themed cooking classes, such as you have like colorful cooking. I mean, it all ties into making it fun. What's the most popular class that these days? And also with the holidays, I'm assuming maybe did you do a Thanksgiving class?
We did a Thanksgiving class, actually, last Whole Foods Market. We did
okay.
A pumpkin-themed class. But we, in general, our most popular classes tend to be our toddler classes or early elementary classes. I think, one, because it's really, in addition to the parents that are excited to figure out how to feed picky eaters, which, of course, you know, they tend to rear their picky eating heads around that toddler age. But it's also, it's really fun for the kids to practice their colors when they're cutting the tomato. They can identify the red and the green peppers, the yellow peppers. So we're again, back to that, the educational component that we're able to integrate into the cooking activity. We can really do that in a fun way for the toddlers. They're practicing colors, they're counting the pieces they cut. We're talking about shapes. The slice of tomato, back to the tomato, it's round. The dice is a square or a cube. They're using their pinching fingers to pinch the pieces of the diced pepper. So there's some fine motor skill development. You know, we're able to integrate the developmental, the educational, and even the socialization and following directions. So those tend to be our most popular classes. That said, we have a lot of fun teaching the upper early elementary, if you will, that third to fifth or sixth grade, because they really are able to, sorry for another food pun, but bite into the subject even more. You know, if, for example, we're making sushi, they're able to learn about how the rice is grown and what a staple food means and talk about culture and a lot of what you and I were doing back in food studies, but tailored down to an early elementary level. We can learn science, talking about how the temperature of water when it boils, when we're talking about rice, for example. So it's really, we have a lot of fun in all our classes, Sherry. That's a tough question.
Yeah, I'm wishing I was a tween. Wishing I was a toddler. I could come along and learn. No, it's really great that you offer this. I think it would be fun to come and learn and cook, all of the above. So, all right. So on that note, let's take a little break here, and we're going to come back. So stay with us. This is All in the Industry on Heritage Radio Network.
Thank you. Hi, this is Linda Palacio, host of A Taste of the Past. And you know, I remember my very first show, December 2009. Ooh, it was a cold winter. And my first guest was William Grimes from the New York Times. Now, the one specific I had to tell him was wear a hat, gloves, and a warm coat, because our studio had no heat. We had no heat in the winter. We had no air conditioning in the summertime. It was rough going, but we were a startup, and we had a good show, regardless of the fact that we could see our breath. So today, we still have hurdles to climb over, and the only way we can get there is with your help. So if you would please consider being a member and press that little beating heart button in the upper right-hand corner to donate. It's going to help us have heat and electricity and air conditioning and really good sound with really great guests. Thanks for listening.
Welcome back to All in the Industry on Heritage Radio Network. I'm Sherry Bayer. My guest today is Cricket Azima. She's the founder and big cheese at the Creative Kitchen and Kids Food Festival. So Cricket, before you the break, you had briefly mentioned the Kids Food Festival, which I believe is coming up in the spring. So how did that come about? I mean, it's quite a large festival now that you're doing.
It is. And it's lots of fun. I hope you can join us this year. We are hosting our next event at the Winter Village in Bryant Park, March 5th and 6th. So we have a little while, but in my world, it's quickly approaching. So we're yes. already very busy programming the fun events. How did it come about? Well, it just seemed like there was a need for it. We really took what we were doing in our classes and blew it up.
Yeah.
Our mission is to educate families on how to make balanced food choices through fun and engaging activities, which is what we're doing in our cooking classes at the Creative Kitchen in general. The main educational component of the Kids Food Festival is an activity that we call the Balanced Plate Scavenger Hunt. So when families arrive at Bryant Park, they receive, I'm sure you're familiar with the My Plate, which replaced the food pyramid in terms
right.
of teaching nutrition and balance to children. So kids or families receive a balanced plate that's pink. And as they go on the festival and engage with the different brands that are sampling foods or activities that are happening on the main stage or take a cooking class in the James Beard Foundation Future Foodies Pavilion, they get a stamp on their plate. Once their plate is fully balanced, if you will, then they show our festival team members and they turn it in for a goodie bag full of feature prizes. So the kids are learning while having a lot of fun, and they're rewarded. So it's really amazing to watch the kids have so much fun while learning. The parents are thrilled. I watched some kids go through the scavenger hunt 3 times, which was it made me feel good. It was a real testament to the fact that actually they're enjoying it and they're learning. So, which is it's a big feat. We have a main stage where we have family programming that can range anywhere from traditional cooking demonstrations to puppet shows about fruits and vegetables or sing-alongs, yoga, all family programming related to health and wellness. And then we have our James Beard Foundation Future Foodies Pavilion, which hosts 50 children at a time and their adults. And those classes are hands-on cooking classes where the kids are making from start to finish individual recipes, and those are led by well-known chefs from New York City.
Wonderful. I'm putting it on my calendar. I'm thinking maybe I can get my niece and nephew to come down and participate.
I hope so. And you can be a big kid and come anyway, Sherry. You don't need a niece and nephew.
I like being a big kid, and I'm thinking I would love to head down there and check it out. And Bryant Park is a fabulous location to be doing this as is anyway. You know, it's a great place. So I'm looking forward to it.
Great.
Now, another thing that you do is you work with different food companies and even schools and you beyond what's happening at the Creative Kitchen. So what type of services are you providing for companies?
So, gosh, it really varies, truly from soup to nuts. When it, you know, anything that touches the kids and family food world, we've done content development from activities for brands around food and cooking, special events, webisodes, spokesperson work, cookbook writing. We've run the gamut. I guess having been in this industry for, well, since 1999, this kids and food world, there's little I haven't done when it comes to kids and food. I've been a food writer, a food editor, and the Creative Kitchen has really provided, gosh, I wish I could pinpoint two or three things that we specialize in, but honestly, Sherry, I like keeping things mixed up and doing as many varied projects as we can. So pretty much anything that touches kids, family, and food, we get excited about.
Yeah, is there a particular company you've recently worked with, or someone that I don't know, you're particularly like proud of, like working the results or working with them, or it was it's a long going relationship, or anything like that?
Yeah, we've had a very, very wonderful relationship with Whole Foods Market, and I'm very grateful for their friendship. We've been providing kids cooking classes in the Whole Foods Market Tribeca location for a few years now, and it's really nice because we're providing programming for the community and for the store and for the parents who can then shop stress-free as well. We'll do a class with the kids if they want to go and shop. So it's been a nice partnership for Whole Foods, the parents, the kids, and the Creative Kitchen. So they really stand out as one of our favorite partners. They've been truly wonderful to us.
Terrific. What do you enjoy most about working with kids? And on the other side of that question is, what are the challenges, if any?
Gosh, the challenge may be my favorite part. I can probably provide. I can combine the answer.
Okay.
To the question. I love when a child tells me that they don't want to eat something. When a child squishes up their nose and tells me that they don't eat vegetables, or that there's no way they're going to touch that green pepper or whatever the vegetable is, I really get pleasure and enjoyment out of figuring out how to relate to the child, how to make them comfortable with the food and get them to taste it. Because I'd say 9 times out of 10, that won't be, that after that one taste, it's not their last. So it's a challenge, and it's a, you know, of course I don't want to shoot myself in the foot. You know, the next time I go and try to get a child to eat a pepper, they're going to say no. But I'd say no, they generally go ahead and try it and incorporate it into their diet. So that's, yes, that's really gratifying to me.
Yes, and I'm thinking you should teach adults too.
Well,
I know some adults that won't touch a green pepper.
I often have to remind parents that they're role models to their kids. I've had parents come into the classes when they're picking up their children, and the parents are squishing their nose at one of the ingredients, or whether it's fruits or vegetables, or, oh, you're using whole grain pasta, and they squish up their nose. And I have to remind the parents that, yes, and it's delicious, and it's better for your body, and that they're role models, too, and the kids are watching them. And it's important that they remember that the kids are going to do as they do. So, you know, I really, and that's one of the things that we stress in our classes, is that we're really, our recipes are not strictly developed for kids' palates. sure you would enjoy the recipe, and I eat them on a regular basis. They're really, regardless of your age, they're delicious. So that after the kids enjoy making them and trying them in the class, they can make them at home as a family. So I think that it's really important that the parents remember that they're role models and eat their fruits and vegetables too.
Yeah, good point. And this is a good segue into my question I had from last week when I had on Carol Chin. She's the Vice President of Culinary Events at Octagon. And her question is, this generation of kids seems to only like to eat pasta with butter and cheese. How can this pasta be tweaked to make it healthier and more nutritious?
So what I would say is a couple things. First step is change that pasta to a whole wheat pasta. Or a whole grain pasta. There are so many different pastas on the market now. Kamut has a pasta. There are pastas made of lentils. You know, just starting with that simple change is great. I then also would recommend to parents that they let the kids choose one vegetable to add to their pasta with butter or cheese. So, for example, offering the child a choice between broccoli or green beans. And as a parent, you know, you're fine with either choice. and the kid's going to be excited because they have a vested interest. They chose that broccoli or those green beans. So they're going to be more likely to eat it. Then once they're comfortable with that, have them choose a second vegetable. I think that adding on to foods that they're already comfortable with is it's a simple, easy way to start incorporating more vegetables into the diet. And also, it makes the child feel safe as well.
Excellent. All right. I think Carol will be pleased with your answer. I've learned something too. No, it's great. It's great advice. Do you find that as well, that it is true that kids really do just want pasta with butter and cheese?
I think, again, back to the whole parent as role model,
yeah.
I think it also goes back to what the parent's offering to serve and what the parent is cooking. Those kids are clever. And, I have so many parents that say to me, well, my child is only eating mac and cheese and chicken fingers. And I ask them, well, what are you cooking at home? They say mac and cheese and chicken fingers. And I kind of stare at them and scratch my head and say, well, have you tried serving something else? And you know what? You know, if the child is not eating it and you go and cook something else, guess who won? The child, you know. So at the end of the day, as a parent, you're not a short order cook. One hopes that you can cook one meal that the whole family will enjoy. And, back to the why we do what we do at the Creative Kitchen, but getting the kids involved in the cooking also will make them more excited to eat whatever the food is. So, as a parent, if you can have the child help cut up the broccoli that you're going to add to that mac and cheese or the pasta with butter, then that just gets them a step closer to being comfortable with the vegetable and hopefully a step closer to eating it too.
Excellent. Well said. On that note, we're going to take a break. We're going to come back and do my speed round and industry news discussion. So stay with us. This is All in the Industry on Heritage Radio Network.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, we are back. This is All in the Industry on Heritage Radio Network. I'm Sherry Bayer. My guest today is Cricket Azima. It's time for my speed round game. So what this is, Cricket, is I'm going to name a couple things. They'll be either or choices, and you just pick your preference.
So. No pressure.
No pressure. It's easy. It's a fun game.
Okay. Bring it on.
Yeah, because you like fun. This is the fun. This is the super
exactly.
fun part
it's
of the show. Okay, here we go. Eat in or eat out?
Eat out.
Wine, beer, cocktail, or mocktail?
Cocktail.
Tasting menu or a la carte?
Tasting menu.
Small plates or large plates?
Small plates.
Communal table or chef's counter?
Table.
Tipping or all-inclusive charge?
Tipping.
How about cooking for kids or having kids cook for you?
Have kids cook for me.
this is another interesting one. How about Jiminy Cricket or Cricket the Sport?
Ooh, Jiminy, of course.
It's because I you're the only cricket I know beyond Jiminy, who I don't know that well.
And watching Cricket the Sport is long.
Okay.
Jiminy Cricket is fun.
All right. Excellent. Two more. Cheese plate or dessert?
Cheese plate.
Manhattan or Brooklyn?
Manhattan.
Excellent. Very good at the game. I'm not surprised.
That was a fun one.
So, industry news this week. Actually, today I have two articles from the Wall Street Journal. So the first one came out last week, and it was titled "Food Instagrammers Turn Their Accounts into Professions" by Sophia Hollander. So this is something I've seen and known about as a publicist, that watching how Instagram has changed and is kind of changing the game of PR and social media, and how there's food Instagrammers who have tons of followers. I mean, talking like thousands, like tens of thousands. And they're now, you know, trying to earn some money doing it. And restaurants are inviting them in, you know, to take pictures and post and paying them. So what do you think of this new trend?
Well, you know, I think that there's definitely a relation to the fact that people don't read much more anymore. So, I mean, there's, if you think about it, I think Instagram is it's definitely hot for a reason. I think that the girls that were featured in the article, I think it's fascinating because they were very young. I think that whether it's a professional, professional photographer, the girls, for example, in the article that were 19 when they started their company, I guess you'd call it,
yeah,
their group, or even just my neighbors taking pictures of their meal, or me. Last weekend, I found myself guilty of posting pictures of the spicy Malaysian crab that I was having. I think people enjoy sharing what they're eating as well. So, I can see that. I don't think the trend's slowing down, Sherry. Do you?
No. And I, if you look on my Instagram feed, it's 9 out of 10 shots are food. I mean, that's what I do. And it's tied to my job, but it's, I always think my work and social are combined, and I love taking food pictures and posting them. But the girls in the article were very young, but I have found this as I've started making relationships with food Instagrammers, that a lot of them are in their early 20s, and they just have a really good handle, cooking in NY or restaurants in NYC or something, you know, Eat Out NYC, things like that. And they've got this massive following. And I definitely don't think the trend is going to slow down. I think people eat with their eyes. But I also still think that writing and words and reviews and, you know, and having experience, that's the one thing, like having experience, yeah, about food and restaurants is really important beyond just taking a photo of a greasy cheeseburger that looks delicious and, you know, makes people want it.
I couldn't agree more. And I think that, to that point, it was really important. I really understood in the NYU Food Studies program having the students, at least when I started, we had to have the practical cooking experience under our belts prior, so that then we all shared the platform of food knowledge, of cooking knowledge, so that we could jump into a conversation and talk about a roux, and we didn't have to go back over what a roux was. So, I do think that the pictures are great. They're gorgeous. They look delicious. But I think figuring out or having the viewer, the reader, the audience, whatever that person may be, also having an understanding of how it tasted, how was it made, was it, where did it come from, as in what farm, is it organic? Was all of those really platform, I don't know what word I'm looking for, is it just having that information about the dish is probably more important than how pretty it looks. I mean, we all know that, you can make, food photographers can make lots of non-food things look delicious, for the photographs too, so.
Yes, well, we'll see. I mean, social media, it's just going to keep changing. So we'll see, months from now, years from now, what happens, what's the new thing. But this is definitely, was a big deal to be in the Wall Street Journal talking about this.
And the
other article, so yesterday came out, I got fascinated reading this, was how at Tavern on the Green, A Holiday Feat by Charles Passy, he's talking about how Tavern on the Green is preparing for its expected 1,600 guests for Thanksgiving, and how Chef John Stevenson basically has to, it's all about timing and organization and prepping these 130 turkeys they're doing. And it's crazy.
I typically, when I go home to Kansas City, or when I'm with my family, whether it's Thanksgiving or Christmas, I'm cooking for 30, and that's enough for me.
30 is a lot for someone at home.
About timing, and I'm really planning ahead, and I'm working for 2 days on anything I can prep in advance, and I can't imagine what Chef Stevenson is doing right now.
I know, and then in the end of the article, it said, on Friday, they have 600 already on the books. Like, it's not like he does tomorrow and he gets the next day off.
He's going to need a nap on Saturday.
Yeah. Sure. And I think it's also, I think in New York, a lot of people dine out on Thanksgiving and major holidays. I think that's something that's, I don't know. Growing up in Miami, I didn't know really people did that. In New York, it seems like it's a very popular thing. And Tavern on the Green is an extremely popular restaurant for these special occasions. And they're charging $125 a person, $75 for kids. So it's like the high expectations, and just the quantity of people is I don't know. I don't even have
impressive.
Words for it.
It's yeah. Certainly impressive.
So I wish him the best. I wish everyone happy Thanksgiving. I hope it's fabulous. I'm sure with the setting and the food it will be. So.
Yeah.
And it's time for another break. We're going to come back. I'm going to do my solo dining experience. So stay with us, All in the Industry on Heritage Radio Network. Welcome back to All in the Industry on Heritage Radio Network. I'm your host, Sherry Bayer. It's time for my solo dining experience, which this week is at Polly G's. Here's the rundown. Location, 60 Greenpoint Avenue in Greenpoint, Brooklyn. The concept: gourmet pizzeria where the wood-fired pies are topped with unusual, locally sourced ingredients. The chef and owner, Polly G. Why did I go? Because I was due for a return visit to what may be my favorite pizza place in New York City, and I was in the area. My experience: I got in line at about 4:50 behind about 15 people who were already waiting for the 5 p.m. opening. Once the doors opened, I was seated at a two-top. I ordered right away and was able to catch up a bit with Polly, who always walks around to greet the tables. What did I get? Hellboy pizza. It had fresh mozzarella, Italian tomatoes, Berkshire soppressato picante, Parmigiano Reggiano, and Mike's hot honey. My take: yum. What a combo. The scene: pizza lovers. Perfect for a casual night out with friends. Interesting tidbit: Polly G opened in 2010 and has received numerous accolades for his pizza. He's soon to open in locations in a location in Hampton, Baltimore, Miami, Florida, and Columbus, Ohio. Personal fun fact: so I met Polly G through social media when he was starting to plan his pizzeria. He learned how to make pizza on his own, practicing at his home in New Jersey, where he has a small wood-fired oven in his backyard. So he was inviting food friends to sample his pies, and I was lucky to get an invitation. Polly's pizzas back then were amazing. They're still amazing. And he has such a genuine personality that I knew he'd be a hit. I actually always joke with him that he should do my PR. So it was great to see him. And another fun fact is, Polly is the one who first brought me out here to Roberta's to try the pizza because this place inspired him. And when I was there the other night, he was wearing a Roberta's hat because he's just cool like that. So the cost was $17, not including tax and gratuity. Would I go back? Absolutely. Website is pollyg.com. So, Cricket, have you been to Polly G's?
No, but now I'm salivating. It sounds delicious. I have obviously eaten Roberta's pizza, and it is absolutely lip-smacking good.
Yeah, Roberta's is one of my favorites, too, and you'll definitely have to get out here at some point and have some pie and visit us at Heritage, because I'm sorry you couldn't make it to the studio day. But anyways, it's great to have you on the show, and it is time for the final question. So next week, my guest is Anthony Giglio. He's one of the most entertaining wine and spirits authorities on the planet, according to his website. And I know Anthony, and he is pretty entertaining. So excited to have him on. So Cricket, please, can you ask a question for Anthony?
Absolutely. So Anthony, my question is, what wine and how much do you recommend parents consume to keep their sanity?
The how much part is the key to that question. Awesome.
Yeah, so.
So that's the show. So thank you so much for coming on and sharing about everything you're doing. I'm really impressed with all that you do.
Well, thank you, Sherry, and I wish you and your family a happy and delicious Thanksgiving tomorrow.
Thank you. Same to you. So I've been speaking with Cricket Azima. She's the founder of The Creative Kitchen and Kids Food Festival. She's also the author of Everybody Eats Lunch and Everybody Can Cook. You can find more information about her at thecreativekitchen.com, at kidsfoodfestival.com, and on social media at Cricket Azima. You can find me on Twitter and Instagram at Sherry Bayer, at Bayer PR, at All Industry. My Facebook page is All in the Industry. My website's BayerPublicRelations.com and SherryBayer.com. As a reminder, all of our shows are archived on HeritageRadioNetwork.org. We are also on Stitcher and iTunes. And we are in our end-of-the-year fundraising drive here at Heritage Radio Network. We are a nonprofit and could use your support. So if you like what you hear here and on all of our programs, please consider making a donation. No amount is too big or too small. You can go to heritageradionetwork.org, show some love by clicking on the beating heart that's at the top corner of the page, and your contribution will be tax deductible. So I thank you in advance. And since it's Thanksgiving, I would like to express some gratitude myself. Thanks to the team at Heritage Radio, including Aaron Fairbanks, Jack Inslee, Allison Hamlin, and my wonderful engineer, Liz Smith. You are all amazing. Fantastic to work with you. Also, thanks to my guests, to Cricket, to listeners, family, and friends. I wish everyone a wonderfully delicious and happy holiday. I'm Sherry Bayer, and I will be back next Wednesday at 4 with another live show. Thanks for being part of All in the Industry. Bye.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.